It's Song Talk Radio.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio, the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. We share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become better at writing songs. Dialing in from our headquarters in Toronto, I'm Neil Modi, and with me my co-host, Phil Emery. How you doing, Phil?
Calling in from St. John's, Newfoundland, and I'm getting tired of snow because there's still lots of snow here. But other than that, I'm pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. It'll disappear at some point. Summer's always late when you're not in Toronto. Okay. And everyone else, please send your comments and questions to at Song Talk Radio on Facebook or Instagram or feedback at songtalk.ca for the email, and we'll share your thoughts on the show. And please visit songtalk.ca to see the show post for this episode, find links to resources we mention, and to download lyric and chord sheets to follow along with the songs that we feature. Today, we're very pleased to welcome John Flansburgh of They Might Be Giants. How you doing, John?
Hey, hey. Hi. It's great to be here.
Great for you to join us on the podcast. Both Phil and I have been longtime fans of They Might Be Giants, for me personally, going back to Flood.
The very first one.
Yeah, way back when. So this is a great honor for us. Just a little bit about the band. They Might Be Giants treat the entire history of popular music as a trampoline rather than a rule book, like two pinballs pinging off each other through musical murals stretching into a giddy ether. TMBG moves by a ricochet. On their upcoming album, The World Is to Dig, due April 14th, 2026, from Idlewild Recordings, the multi-Grammy-winning duo carry on bouncing through the pop multiverse, digging into whatever they find with playful zeal. John Linnell and John Flansburgh continue to fire ideas off one another like particles in a perpetual motion experiment, each collision producing a new angle, a new melodic left turn, resulting in tracks packed with esoteric references, mischievous details, and left-field detours. Untethered from trends, immune to nostalgia, and equally ready to draw from Tin Pan Alley theatrics and contemporary pop culture references, The World Is to Dig is the sound of a band very much in motion, not chasing relevance, but generating it on their own terms. Tonight, we're going to be talking to John about TMBG's song Outside Brain. Be sure to download the lyric sheet on the show post at songtalk.ca so you can follow along. Let's take a listen. That's a fantastically quirky song, John. That's amazing.
I guess it's quirky.
I have so many questions. So as far as I can tell, all your music is modal, isn't it?
I'm going to pretend I've taken truth serum before this interview began and just actually say the things that cross my mind. I don't even really know what modal means. I mean, I know what modes are. I practice the guitar and do scales that are modal. I know, like, you know, blues scales are based on, like, you know, a bunch of different, like, kind of modal things, and I can kind of hear it. And, you know, sometimes when I'm, like, experimenting with, like, a, you know, like, Hungarian minor or something, and I'm, like, checking out, like, how a melody going up is different than the melody going back, like, that stuff, I guess, is modal in a sense, like harmonic rules applying to, like, sort of where things land. But, like, I had, you know, this is the problem when you let amateurs into the professional world of an enterprise.
Yes.
You know, when we started They Might Be Giants, I couldn't play the guitar and sing at the same time. There were many, many things about music I didn't understand at all. Recently, we were working with a trombone player. He was actually the sub for Dan Levine, our regular trombone player, and I'm trying to remember his name. He's a super nice guy, very, very talented, excellent trombone player, but he was only with us for a couple of days. And in the midst of talking to him backstage, I was like, you know, like, I mean, just an aside, there are jokes literally, like, what do you call, like, a trombone player with a pager, an optimist, or whatever, you know? Yeah. I was just shooting the shit backstage with this, with the guy, trying to, like, you know, make him feel comfortable. It's like, so, like, what do you do when, like, you're not like subbing for Dan Levine? And he was like, I actually, like, I'm a music professor at Columbia University. And I was like, what, my imposter syndrome just, like, overwhelmed me at that point, because I felt like, I know less about music than his pinky finger. So when you say that, I'm sure it's true, but I don't really think of things. I think of things in much more essential ways than that. I mean, I've spent my entire life completely preoccupied with songs and songwriting and things like that. Really know, I don't have enough of an education to really understand modes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And there are a lot of aspects of songwriting that law songwriters work too intuitively. Right. And then sometimes you become aware of them. I mean, you know, we've done songwriting challenges on our podcast every year. And a couple of years ago, we did a songwriting challenge where we challenged our listeners to write a song in a mode, experimenting with modes.
So I think of major and minor much more than modality, even though they're probably, yeah. I mean, as you say, like, all our songs are kind of modal.
It took me a long time to get my head around modes actually doing that challenge. So
yeah, yeah, it's a different thing. But what I was wondering about with regard to Outside Brain is, I mean, I say it's quirky, but at the same time, it's poppy and it's catchy, right? And there's always been a balance with you guys between, you know, being strange and esoteric and also being super catchy and memorable. I mean, even with this song, there's a refrain that you even call it in the lyric, one refrain, Outside Brain, and that is the refrain of the chorus. And then there's a B section, which you might call the chorus, except that it's different enough to be a chorus, but I'm not sure it is a chorus. So you're kind of playing with conventions and throwing out some conventions and embracing some. And I just wonder about that balance, how intentional that is.
Everything is, you know, both John and I spend a lot of time working on our songs. So it's like, there's some things that happen quickly, but we tend to be very into editing and production and fussing over. Like, there's no idea too small for us not to fuss over. But, like, with Outside Brain, you know, I guess I was sort of thinking of Bob Mould songs. Like, there's this thing about Bob Mould songs that's really exciting, which is that there's constant pushing of rhythms. It's like lots of things are like dun, 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 dun. I mean, it's like Charleston-y. I make it sound Charleston-y. It sounds kind of hornier. But there is this thing in rock where it's like a very driving beat, and then there's also additional pushes. And to me, that is exactly like the musical equivalent of the kind of manic energy. The lyric is really about kind of being on this sort of like disoriented manic run, and like the chorusy. Well, I guess it's, I don't know which part is the chorusy part, but in the part where it goes, you know, from a da da to a da da, that's very much about kind of capturing the same kind of energy that's in the music. So it's really about marrying the two.
Are you conscious about marrying the lyrics to the music in terms of intent and feel?
I'm conscious of how they relate to each other. It doesn't have to be, you know, there are plenty of unhappy marriages. I think that's the thing about songwriting, is that it is an incredibly plastic medium in the lower case. Like there's just no end to the variations, and it's the variations that make it exciting. There's no wrong way to do it. You can have a successful song in a million different ways, and contrasting, you know, making a huge contrast between the lyric and the sort of the vibe of the music, you know, is something that we've done a lot. And in some ways, I guess if you were going to sort of make a pastiche of They Might Be Giants, you might make a very doomy lyric with like a very kind of children's music kind of sounding thing. But that's a kind of song that we've done. But I don't think it's like the only, I mean, it's definitely not the only thing we've done.
Yeah, for sure. Because that B part, the mind shaft to a crawl space, across the bed of nails, the broken glass, it does sound, I call it the chorusy because it does come to a resolution there, right? Like the earlier part is filled with tension as the driving beat and the melodies kind of keep it moving. And then it drops in, right?
Yeah, I feel like we should start using all the terms that like Nashville songwriters use at this point. Yeah. It's just because it gets to the kicker line. I mean, if you really want to get to the inside part of it, it's like there's probably some, you know, they probably call it like, you know, gold dust is like the term for like the rapid fire vocals. Like, we'll do some gold dust there and then we'll hit the kicker, you know? And it's like, right. it's like how there's a German word for everything, every, you know, complex thought that you have, every combination you have. I feel like in Nashville, there's a term for everything. And it does get to the kicker line, which is like, you know, very key to, that's a different kind of chorus. It's like the super truncated chorus where it's just like, you think you've got a phrase that is like the hook. When the phrase is the hook, that's when Nashville people talk about kicker lines.
Right. So are you really conscious about developing those sort of hook lines, or do they just kind of happen?
It's something I'm just aware of. I mean, I'm sort of just fascinated as an outsider. I'm fascinated. Like, you know, I really kind of learned about songwriting in whatever formal way that I learned about it from, like, I listened to a lot of, I obviously listened to a lot of like new wave and punk rock music and pop music from the 60s, grew up with pop music in the 60s. So like when I figured out that there was this like number system, like, you know, 1, 6, minor, 4, 5, that was like a huge, that was like the key to the palace for me. I started writing songs because I wanted to play the guitar, and playing other people's songs was too hard. So it was like a way in to actually just, you know, playing at my own rate. And then the number system was like this amazing thing. But, you know, like Nashville people, they always do the numbers in combinations. So they'll be like, it's like 16:45, not 1, 6, 4, 5, so they can string do like a little string of their best licks. Like they know their licks, like a guitar player or a pedal steel player will know their licks by the transition from one chord to another chord. So that's why they put it in pairs. Cause it's like, then they know like, oh, it's 1, 6, I'll slip in, you know, idea number 4, you know, in there. And it's because it's a lot of it's built on cliches. So
yeah, I've never heard it quite put like that. But
how is, as working with another songwriter, how are the roles divvied out? Do you both come, you know, together with songs in progress and then kind of bounce them off each other, or are they fairly done and then you work together on them?
Well, you know, we're both like kind of shy about stuff, and we tend, I mean, we're both songwriters, we work independently, and we present songs to one another sort of a lot of times as finished products. And that's, you know, that's most of the time. And then we also, because we have a lot of, often have a lot of things in the fire, we kind of will, you know, send little like care packages of like tracks, or, you know, with computer based, you know, we've always been kind of home recording enthusiasts. We started as home recording enthusiasts. I had a TX 4-track that I bought with like money from summer jobs when I was like not even a teenager. Like I was obsessed with multi-track recording and pop music and just everything. And so that was actually before I ever bought an instrument. I bought, who knows what I thought I was going to do with it. Like, you know, this is, you know, Roxy Music hadn't even formed, you know, like there was no sense of like home recording, but I was into it. I was just into it. I was just into sound. And then John started playing the piano, and we were friends in like junior, well, we weren't friends in junior high school. I knew him. He's a year older than me. So he was in a different grade, so we didn't share any classes. But it's when we got into high school, we were in the same clique, and we saw a bunch of concerts together. And then as high school went on, I just got more and more into songs and really like new wave music, punk rock music in the mid-70s, late-70s was like Amnesty Day for me. It was like a way, I think up until that point, I think it felt too scary or like presumptuous. It was just to be a songwriter was just too big a deal. I mean, I didn't know how to play an instrument. So it's like, if you don't, you know, I mean, you really have to be on an ego trip to think you can write songs if you don't even play.
Huh. I like the fact that actually you started playing guitar, writing your own songs for the same reason I did. My friends couldn't actually figure out how to play songs. Like, we could play a verse and a chorus, but then there's a bridge part we could never figure out. So we just didn't
play it. Right. Well, we're all in good company because that's how the Ramones got started. So
yeah, exactly. And it's always a great thing. I mean, you learn a little bit from other people, and then that was always my inclination too. You start doing some cover songs. It's like, oh, I can do something like this, and then, but it'll be a lot simpler, of course, like you say, right? It's not really as complicated. But then you end up growing out of that. Like it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's a great evolution. Okay, I am here in the band. Indeed, that's all time we have on Song Talk Radio today. Special thanks to John Flansburgh and They Might Be Giants.
Oh, this is so short. Yes. So short. I just want to say to all the songwriters out there, rhyming is overrated. Bridges are overrated. Write simpler. It's going to be okay.
I don't know about the bridge.
Wise words.
I know. It might sound controversial, but it's the 21st century. Hip hop happened.
That's true. Well, yes, that's true.
Very true. Be true. We can get a conversation about that.
All right, part two coming up.
Where can our listeners find out more about They Might Be Giants?
Oh, I don't know. We have stuff everywhere. You know, Spotify. We're on Spotify. We actually, you know, we have a very active mailing list. The Giants in a passive way. You can get a lot of interesting stuff off of that.
You guys still have that dial a song service?
In a couple of different modes. We have a phone app that has previews a lot of unreleased stuff. Like right now, you can hear stuff that's not anywhere else on this phone app that's actually quite charming. It looks like a cassette on your phone made out of felt. And and then there is an actual phone line that a guy in our office is completely active, but I never think about it. It's like an 800 number. And I mean, it's, talk about making promises you can't keep. You know, we started doing it like 40 years ago, and now we're still have to stick to it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's great. I remember that from back in the day. We want to hear from you too, so please send your comments, Facebook or Instagram, to @songtalkradio, or send us an email for feedback @songtalk.ca. Be sure to check out our YouTube channel for live performance videos and full episodes. Subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider, and join us at our next monthly Song Talk meetup if you're in Toronto, or in person meetups, or anywhere in the world for our online meetups. It's free to join on Eventbrite and free to attend the meetup. You can follow me at neilmodi.com. You can follow Phil.
PhilEmery.ca.
And John, where does TMBG post the most? Where should we be following you?
It's like feeding fish. You know, you just have to sprinkle a little bit of something. We're on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok, and we're still on X. We're afraid of leaving X, even though it seems like it's turned into a hellscape. But we're on Blue Sky, which is like definitely not as active as X, which is makes me feel weird. But anyway.
Definitely be sure to follow TMBG wherever you can find them then. All right, be sure to stop by the website songtalk.ca to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest. Thanks for tuning in, and
keep on writing.